Welcome to the Garden Angelus, where we talk about flowers, veggies, and all the best dirt. I'm Dee Nash from Guthrie, Oklahoma.
And I'm Carol Michael from Indianapolis, Indiana. We call ourselves Garden Angelus because we are evangelists for gardening. We love gardening and we want others to love it too.
We are also authors and invite you to check out our books, including my book, The 2030-Something Garden Guide, A No-Fuss, Down-and-Dirty Gardening 101 for anyone who wants to grow stuff.
And my books, including Potted and Pruned, Homegrown and Handpicked, and Seeded and Sodded, my trilogy of gardening humor, and my new book, Creatures and Critters, Who's in My Garden. You can ask for any of our books at your favorite bookstore or find them online wherever books are sold.
Speaking of online, you can also find us as the Garden Angelus on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, occasionally Pinterest, and we'd love for you to join our Facebook group, the Garden Angelus Garden Club.
And now on to this week's episode. Hello, Dee.
Hello, Carol. What are your garden updates for this week?
Well,
because we're in the midst of the season.
Yes, I am finally picking peas. The first to show up are the basic pea pods. And then the snap peas are coming on. Pick some of those. And the shelling peas ought to be ready in a day or two. So I did all that.
What are the basic pea pods? I guess I don't understand what that means.
You know, just like the flat pea pods. I don't know. What are they called? Flat pea pods.
I don't know. Anyway, go ahead.
Oregon pea pod too. It's just you eat the pea pod and everything.
Wasn't that same thing as sugar snap?
No, there's three kinds of peas, Dee.
Well, I didn't know that, Carol. Thanks for sharing.
Yes, and interestingly enough, I just put a new video on my Indie Gardener channel about the three kinds of peas.
Well, there you go.
The flat pea pods, the sugar snaps, which look plumped up, and then the shelling peas. Anyway, picking them all.
I didn't know there were three kinds of peas, probably because in Oklahoma, we have a very short pea season, and mine is nearly finished. I just grow snow peas and sweet potted peas. And I have grown shelling peas. Wouldn't that be four kinds of peas?
I don't know. I have three kinds, Dee. I don't really know. I'm picking strawberries.
Cool.
I've suckered my tomatoes for the first time. We can talk about that sometime.
Yep.
All my little seeds for zinnias and marigolds and sunflowers are coming up, so I'm going to be thinning those out. I hope we get some rain today and I can thin some things out better. So, and I'm very pleased. Every plant I bought has been planted. The only thing I haven't planted yet are some of the trial plants that I got, and I just got to find spots for them. So it's all good. It's all good.
I was out of town, and when I was out of town, I got a message that some more trial plants came from Proven Winners, and there's salvias and catmint. I think those are the two things we got. So I'm going to plant those today, I hope. As soon as we're done here, today it's only 85 in Oklahoma, so that's considered, you know, pretty seasonable. Last few days have been hotter than, well, we won't go there, hotter than Hades. What else have I been doing? When I got back, I went around and just checked everything, made sure that our drip irrigation system on the tomatoes was working. It is. And I noticed that some kind of caterpillar has been eating my sunflowers, mostly my sunflowers, because I have a whole bed of sunflowers. But I saw no evidence of said caterpillars, which tells me the wasps have been busy.
Yay for the wasps.
Yes.
That is lovely. So, we just kind of like plod along, and we seem like we're dragging spring along, and then suddenly everything is going gangbusters. Kapow.
Yeah. We're in real summer now in Oklahoma, and you guys are in real spring.
We're heading towards summer, though. Heading towards summer.
Yep, long, hot summer.
So, here's the quote. Spring, a lovely reminder of how beautiful change can truly be. By Unknown.
I like Unknown.
Yeah, my favorite quotes. Anyway, spring is also a reminder that there is sure a lot to do in a garden.
And we are busy right now.
We are.
So
we are.
We wanted to give everybody kind of a pep talk today. And instead of focusing on an individual flower like we sometimes do, we were going to focus on social media and how not only do people put their own best faces forward in social media, their best moments, they put their best moments in their garden.
Right. And the reason you see so many close-ups of flowers is because beyond that is probably a pile of weeds or maybe containers that haven't been planted or God only knows what. But if you back up from those beautiful close-ups, you'll find that gardens have ugly moments.
Yes, they have ugly spells, both before and after a flower blooms, and certain flowers especially have ugly spells. And so sometimes death is beautiful for a flower, like a sunflower. You know, a sunflower as it dies is quite pretty, but right. Other flowers, not so much.
Well, my salvia, I had the rose marvel that was just gorgeous a week and a half ago. And Now the flower heads have turned to seed stalks, and they're sort of a real dark, moody mauve color. So I might leave them for a little bit because they have sort of a different look to them. So, but they're ready to be deadheaded. And we wanted to talk about deadheading perennials and annuals too.
Right. And so when you deadhead perennials or annuals, you cut down pretty far and you remove both the flower and the stalk beneath the flower. And you think about where things are, you know, like you think when you're doing that, it's hard for people when they first start gardening to do that. But if you don't do that, you may not get any more flowers.
Right.
Or you'll have ugliness next to your new pretty flowers in the case of salvia. So this is a good time to do that and to do the Chelsea chop.
Yes, and I call the Chelsea chop the Indy 500 chop, but it's at the end of May when we cut back the fall flowering plants like asters, moms, goldenrod. You cut those back by about half, which is also hard for people to...
Oh, it's really hard for people. And the thing is I haven't done mine yet, but I didn't have time, number one, and I'm going to do it today. And another thing is, in Oklahoma, we have a very long summer season, right? And so if I chop them right back at May at the same time everybody does the Chelsea chop, I'll be chopping them again before fall because they grow up even more. So just remember that when you cut your stuff back in half, it's going to get bushier and better. Bushier and better.
Right. And I hate to make this sound like a promotion for my Indie Gardener YouTube channel, but yesterday I posted a video about the Chelsea chop to just show people. I mean, it's literally chop it off. It's not fine pruning. It's chopping. Whack them back.
So there's a little bit of difference between deadheading and Chelsea chopping or Indiana chopping or whatever it is you call it. So also this is a time in the garden to look where you have dull spots or empty spots and see what you need to put there to make it look better.
Right. And so if you have a perennial bed and you're not sure you want to commit to some more perennials, there's no sin in putting a few annual flowers in your perennial border just to fill it in.
Right. Annuals or tropicals.
Tropicals.
Because we treat tropical flowers in our gardens like annuals. You know, you just grow them for the summer, but they're not true annuals. In their own climate, they are actually probably perennial. But I digress. Keep going. What should people plant?
A good example of that would be cannas or tropical.
Yes, and subtropical both, because they overwinter here, some of them, and some of them they don't. Another good example is what we call annual vinca, or what I call annual periwinkle. This is not to be confused with the invasive one or aggressive one, depending on where you live, that spreads everywhere. This is the one that's really, really cute, and it loves hot sun, and right now is the time to plant it.
Right, because if you plant it earlier, it just sulks. And the annual vinca comes in like white and pink and mauve and very pretty. And they have a new variety, which I bought, and so I should know what it is, that has a thinner petal and smaller flowers, which is just adorable. I'll send you a picture.
Okay. I grew that one last year, and it is cute as it can be. But no, I don't remember the name either, and we didn't write it in our notes, so therefore we are not going to talk about it. For annuals, think about zinnia seeds, sunflowers, things that are like going to produce a flower pretty quickly and fill in an area. I mean, the first thing when people ask me, they like right about now, they go, oh my gosh, I got to have something to grow in this spot, and it's hot and sunny, And I said, well, make sure you have water. And then on top of that, if it's hot and sunny, grow zinnias there. Just go buy a packet of seed and throw it down.
Well, and around here, and I don't know if they do this in Oklahoma, around here they sell like a 6 or 8 inch pot of zinnias, and they're the varieties that maybe get a foot or a foot and a half tall, the profusion zinnias. Those can just be taken right out of the pot and plopped into that bare spot, and it's instant color. Instant color, D. Instant color.
Instant color. And we like instant color, right?
Right.
So if you're looking for something to grow, that's a good thing to grow. Don't put zinnias in the shade because they'll get mildew. Maybe not the profusion series because they're pretty mildew resistant, but even by the end of the season, they might have it. So
here's one flower you should not plant.
What's that?
Flower plasticus.
Wouldn't that be Bloomus plasticus?
I don't know. Plastic flowers. Forget it. I see those every once in a while, and I'm like, what? Like plastic, like fake geraniums in a basket, and they still got them hanging there at Christmas time.
And by then, they're really faded from the sun.
Yes, and I'm like, don't be getting the plastic flowers. Plastic flowers, fine inside, I guess, but don't put plastic or silk flowers in your garden thinking you're fooling anybody.
You're not. You're not, and people will laugh at you. Unless you're old, then they just feel for you. Okay, so we got another quote. Are we done with this section now?
We got another quote, Dee. Yeah, we're done.
Cool. It will never rain roses. When we want to have more roses, we must plant more roses. George Eliot. Leave it to George Eliot to just put it out there.
Exactly. And so this applies to vegetable gardening because if you want homegrown vegetables, they ain't going to fall from the sky. You're going to have to plant a little garden.
Going to have to put a little bit of sweat equity in there.
Exactly. And what is the number one question we get in early June about vegetable gardening, Dee? Number one question.
Is it too late to start my vegetable garden?
Yes, that is the number one question. Bingo. You get a prize.
Thanks, because I hear that question a lot. Is it too late, Carol, in Oklahoma and Indiana?
Well, in Indiana, Dee, it is not too late.
It is not too late in Oklahoma either if you grow certain things.
Right. It's way too late for lettuce and peas, obviously.
Yeah, your lettuce, if you haven't grown it already, it's not going to sprout right now. And if you're already growing it, it's turned bitter in your garden. So if you're a new gardener and you eat a bitter leaf of lettuce and think, my God, what is that horrible taste? It just means that your lettuce is trying to bolt.
Send up a flower stalk.
Yes. So it's still not too late in June, mid-June, to start a garden, but you got to have the right expectations, okay? So think of things that you can grow right now.
So right now, seed-wise, you could sow some green beans.
Yep, preferably bush beans.
Bush beans. You could plant a hill of cantaloupe.
You sure could, and that cantaloupe will taste mighty sweet by the end of summer.
You could plant some summer squash.
Easily. Watch out for those squash bugs. I'm going to take a picture of my veg pod.
You could plant some cucumbers.
Yes, you could plant cucumbers.
And then if you have a notion and you're willing to spend the money, and this year I have no idea if the garden centers even have them, but sometimes they will have tomatoes, peppers, eggplant that are growing in like gallon-sized pots. Or even 2 gallon pots. So these are pretty mature plants. You could still buy those and put those out in the garden if you wanted to. But you have to buy a fairly large mature plant.
You do, because you don't have much summer left to finish it off. Now, you probably want a determinate tomato plant, but if you find those in those big containers, that's what you're going to find anyway. It's going to be one that doesn't produce fruit all season. It produces it over that short season, but you'll get a lot of fruit, hopefully.
Right.
The other thing I was going to say is right now, I'm getting ready to plant my cucumbers. In fact, I might do it today. I'm going to pull up some of my peas, probably my snow peas, and I'll put my cucumber seed where my snow peas were because I've already got the fence. So that's an idea, too.
That is a good idea. I just pulled out all my lettuces. They had started to bolt and send up flower stalks, and they were bitter and nasty. And I saw a little baby bunny running in there eating it, and I thought, oh, no, you're not eating in my garden. So I'm going to plant rows of green beans where I pulled out my lettuce.
It's Speaking of green beans, I planted some green beans a couple of weeks ago, and I thought they were bush beans, but I am now thinking they might not be bush beans because they have very long stems. And I was like, oh, well, shoot. Because I try to usually just buy bush beans, but this might have been sent to me as a trial thing, and I just put them out there thinking they didn't check the packet. So check those packets, people. It happens to all of us.
Right, because the other thing that you'll find on the packet is days to harvest. And that's generally, to clarify, that's days from when you put it in the garden to when you harvest it. Because tomatoes might say like 65 days, but that doesn't mean you can start with a tomato seed. That's like when you place that plant in the garden. But for beans and squash and all those, you can see the days to harvest on the packet, and that'll tell you if you got enough time.
But you have enough time.
That's true. And here's another thing that I just thought of, Dee, is when you've like pull out like lettuce and crops like that before you plant something else, it is good to mix. If you have some compost, it's good to mix that in and kind of refresh that soil a little bit and then plant the next thing.
Right, because your soil gets depleted. That's one of the reasons that I'm putting cucumbers, which are heavy feeders, in a spot where I had peas, because peas add nitrogen back to the soil. So these are just little things you learn as you garden, and, you know, it's all good. Oh, and my lavender is blooming, but that's another day. Go ahead.
Yeah, maybe we'll talk about lavender next week.
Maybe so.
My weeds are growing well in the garden. Like I said, I really would like a spot of rain, and I think we're going to get some from that tropical storm that hit Louisiana. I think it's supposed to swoop in with some rain later today.
Well, that's good for you guys.
Yeah, if it doesn't, then I'll probably have to go ahead and water because it's been 5 days since we've had rain. 6 days.
When you say that stuff, it just makes me laugh because I've been watering steadily all along pretty much. I mean, we get some rain in spring, but I won't see any more rain. Well, we're hitting that heat period, so I don't think I'll see any more rain probably till August. So,
good grief.
Drip irrigation. That's what you people want in Oklahoma.
And really, I think July, I have to look it up. July is, I think, the second rainiest month of the year in Indiana.
Yeah, rarely see rain. Okay.
But you know, as I've said before, Dee, I do live in paradise.
Yeah, I visited during a drought once. It was not paradise because no one was used to watering their gardens. But I digress. Let's move on to our bookshelf.
Okay, today on the bookshelf we have a new book, which came out, I think it came out last fall or winter.
I do too.
It's called Gardener's Guide to Compact Plants, Edibles and Ornamentals for Small Space Gardening by Jessica Walliser, who is a friend of ours. And did you get this book too?
I did. It's a good book.
This is a really good book. And yesterday I had a Zoom garden club meeting with my garden club.
Yep.
And one of the gals was talking about how she and her husband were really trying to pull out the really super big stuff that was getting hard for them to manage and prune. And she wanted to put in like more compact boxwoods. And so I pulled this up and I went right to boxwoods, and there's a variety called Compacta.
Right.
And so I was able to tell her that. But this book really is nice because it does have a lot of good varieties that are smaller, which is good if you have a small garden or you're trying to just kind of grow closer up to the house and create more intimacy, or maybe you have a fairy garden or you have one of those train gardens where people put train tracks through them.
Yes, I've been to several with you, actually. We've visited several train gardens.
So I really enjoyed looking through this book, and I think Jessica did a really good job. And so people would say, well, do I need a book on compact plants? Why don't I just Google compact plants? And I would say, because when somebody's written it, they've given it some thought and they've talked to the growers. They've probably seen some of the plants in action.
Sure.
And so you get a better sense of what is possible.
In other words, you're saying that people who write books do research. What?
Yes. Yes. They do.
Well, and Jessica is a good researcher, so I'm sure it's a great book. And I've read it, and it's really good. Some people have
got some nice garden plans in here too.
Good.
So Compact. We have a link to that in our show notes, and we think that's a good book to get. And I think my garden club member was going to get that, because the other thing you can do, you get a book like that and you see all these varieties, and then you run to your local garden center and they're like, huh? And they're ask them to go to their suppliers and nursery suppliers and order them, because a lot of times they don't think to get them in.
I think that's a good tip, because, and that's one reason you want to shop at your local nursery instead of just at box stores. And that's because they can order things in. And a lot of times I'll call ahead, because I live out in the country, and I'll say, hey, do you guys have this plant? And they say, maybe not, because it's too new or whatever. And I'll say, well, could you order it in for me? And almost always they will.
Right. In my little local greenhouse, she can get stuff in for me all the time. And some stuff, it's a little bit more difficult to find, but she kind of keeps her eye out. And then eventually she calls or sends me a message and says, we got it.
Yep.
And then I run, go get it.
Yes, you do.
So anyway, that's the book, Gardener's Guide to Compact Plants by Jessica Walliser. And I was going to check to see, that is from our friends at Quarto.
Quarto Press?
Quarto. Cool Springs Press, mm-hmm. Which is part of the Quarto group. So anyway, there you go. I got another quote for you, Dee. I don't think you read this quote in advance.
No, I did not, but it's true.
Worms are the intestines of the earth, by Aristotle, supposedly.
Yeah, I don't know that Aristotle said that, but okay. So why are we talking about earthworms?
Well, because we were going to talk about mulch.
Yep.
And how mulch is a great thing you can do for your soil, to put a nice layer of mulch. And then it needs to be a biodegradable mulch. I cringe like crazy when people buy rubberized mulch.
Yeah, me too. I don't like it. It's gross. Because it gets mixed up in your dirt and you never can get rid of it. And it doesn't break down and it's just gross.
The only place I might put it is if I had an area like where I was storing trash cans or something, and I was never going to plant anything there.
Yeah.
And that's the one time I would put a fabric down.
Yeah, I don't. Yeah. I don't like landscape fabric either. In fact, a friend and I were just talking about it. I mean, I use it sometimes to line my raised beds, but that's about the only time. Or if you were trying to keep an area like a playground, maybe a playground would be okay for rubber mulch. But
so you want a biodegradable mulch, which also means we don't consider rocks to be mulch.
They're not mulch technically, although I do use gravel around my fountain, and I like the gravel. I think it's pretty, and some of my friends use gravel in their gardens that are more xeriscaped. But for the most part, I use fine pine. I like fine pine mulch. I think it's pretty. I think it breaks down fast. It's my favorite mulch.
And you did make a note that earthworms break down the mulch over time, and they enrich the soil.
But
and that's very good. And for the most part here in Indiana and in Oklahoma, earthworms are our friends.
Right.
But there is a bad dude earthworm. And the common name, and I don't have the botanical name, is Asian jumping worms.
Yeah.
Which can overwhelm a forest and are a big problem in Wisconsin.
I think they're also, I think some earthworms, I don't know if it's the Asian jumping worm, but I think some earthworms overwhelm the forests in the Pacific Northwest too.
Could be, but I know they've been a big problem up in Wisconsin. And actually, we'll have a link to the Cornell University had some stuff on them as an invasive pest. I mean, they're not native.
No.
But, and I'll quote them here. They said, the jumping worms alter the structure and chemistry of the soil dramatically, leaving a distinctive grainy soil full of worm castings, and they can damage lawns, landscapes, and even the forest understory habitat.
They have a ring on them.
Yes. You can identify these because they said they are shiny. And they have the white ring around the earthworm, and that probably has a name, goes all the way around them. And when we go to that link, I think you'll see a picture of them.
Yes, you do. There's a picture of them. The jumping worm. Yuck.
So people unknowingly spread these worms when they use them for bait. fishing bait.
Yeah.
Or they transport the egg cocoons on their shoes and in the wheels of cars in mulch, or if they even transplanted plants and the worms were in there, or the egg cocoons were in the transplanted plant dirt.
So. Well, that's really depressing. I don't think I have them here. I haven't looked to see if they're in Oklahoma. I don't think they are.
I don't think they're in Indiana. If they're anywhere in Indiana, they're way up north still. But that's a scary thought.
Yeah, it's a bad deal. But
they don't really have any controls for it that work.
There are so many things that are invasive in the United States that they don't have controls for. But ugh. So one thing, well, I don't know what to do about those other than try not to think about them.
Well, the thing is, okay, so here's some positive things.
Okay, thanks.
So the Department of Agriculture, this is why plants are inspected when they're moved state to state.
Yeah.
Why you have inspections. Why if you take a plant from Canada to the United States or United States to Canada, they inspect for things like this.
Right.
So that they try to keep them from getting spread. And so they give them a...
Phyto certificate.
I was trying to think of that. This shows that it was sanitary. And so that's the first thing you should look at if you buy plants from out of state. Look for that certificate.
Right. And if you buy plants online from a reputable nursery, they'll have their phyto certificate, or they won't ship to your state. A lot of states won't ship to California because California has so many invasives and so much trouble that they're very, very strict, and understandably so.
Right. And they have so many farms in California that could just be wiped out by the wrong pest.
So can we go back to talking about mulch now for just a second?
Yes. We can talk about mulch because the other thing about mulch is it's a lot of work.
It is a lot of work. And I've been doing a lot of garden consultations this spring and last spring with people in the 70 to 80 age bracket. And these are people who have been gardeners all their lives, but they've reached a point and they invite me out to their house to help them with ideas. And I will tell you that almost all of them, I've had to say, you've got to re-enrich your soil because it's just all the nutrients have been watered out of it and used up by the plant roots. And the other thing is you need to mulch. And they look at me with dismay, and I understand why, because mulching is hard, hard work. And so I tell them where to buy their mulch, you know, and that's not too expensive because they are on fixed incomes, which is also young people have the same issue too. And then I say, hire some help. Hire some help to lay down that mulch and to lay down some compost in your garden. And if you'll do those two things, and that's true of anybody almost. I mean, somebody will say, well, Dee, you're supposed to tell them to test their soil. Yeah, I am. But I can tell you by looking at these gardens, that's what they need. And so I just say, put down some compost and put down some mulch, and that's not going to hurt your garden. I don't care who you are.
Right. Exactly. That is excellent advice, Dee.
Thanks.
Excellent advice.
So hire college students to help you if you need help. College students are all at home right now anyway, so good strong backs.
That's right. I got a nephew that's a college student, good strong back. I think my sister's got him working pretty hard though.
She does. Good on her.
She's got a bunch of ivy, and so I think he's been tasked with removing this giant bed of ivy, and they got some projects. I got to go check it out. They got some big projects going on. She's got her college age daughter and son out there working hard. But they enjoy it, I think.
I think they do too. I mean, everybody I've ever hired really likes that kind of work like I do. And also, if you're going to hire people to help you, supervise them. Don't expect them to know what to do in your garden. Stuff will get pulled up.
That's right. That's right. And they'll learn stuff as they go.
Which is a plus for everyone.
Exactly. So that's our show for today, Dee. Shall we wrap it up?
You betcha.
All right. We want to thank you for listening to The Garden Angelus. If you like our podcast, please tell your friends about us.
And if you listen on Apple Podcasts, we'd appreciate a 5-star review. That helps us get noticed by the algorithm and by others.
Yes. And be sure and check out our show notes for links for more information about today's topics, plus links to our own websites.
It was lovely to chat with all of you over the garden gate today. Bye until next week.
Bye.